Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube? Because I was so amazed by how quickly he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube while I was on vacation.
Make it quick, young man.
Aw, see? Pop-Pop trusts you.
I think we should call a doctor.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them, while everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Michael McKee, Dr. Michael McKee, 39-year-old vascular surgeon, pled not guilty to 4 counts of aggravated murder and 1 count of aggravated burglary in the December 30th shooting deaths of his ex-wife, Monique Tempe, and her husband, Spencer Tempe, at their Columbus, Ohio home. The indictment alleges McKee used a firearm equipped with a suppressor to execute that very couple while their 2 young children, ages 1 and 4, slept in the same house in the other room. Monique's family has described McKee as emotionally abusive and claims he threatened to kill her on multiple occasions during their brief 7-month marriage, which ended about a decade ago in 2017. McKee allegedly traveled from Illinois to Ohio, drove but 300 some miles, entered the home without forced entry, committed the killings around 3:42 a.m., and then got back in his car and drove back, keeping the murder weapon in his residence, where police later recovered it. Yeah, and then allegedly went back to work for 11 days, too. Joining me now to break down the behavioral indicators in this case, Robin Drigg, former FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Robin, the family says Monique told them McKee threatened to kill her multiple times during their marriage, and that was 8 years before these murders allegedly occurred. From a behavioral standpoint, what does it tell you when someone carries that kind of fixation across nearly a decade through multiple jobs, multiple states, an entirely new life built by her former partner, and even the fact that when saying this to begin with to their partner about a decade ago when you're with them, I mean, it says a lot that someone's even using that phrase in general with a partner, does it not?
Yeah, there's a few things in there. I actually looked that up, Tony. The threaten to kill or do violence against your spouse or even a partner of any sort in your life. How common is that with actual real threats of violence where they do escalate? And unbelievably not, they're extremely high. I think it was like 80-85% of the people that actually do those kind of threats follow through on those threats.
And so no
that
kidding.
Yeah, it's actually, because I was looking up, you know me, I hear someone say something, I got to look it up. What are the probabilities? You know, because we're seeing, in hindsight, we always say, is this a red flag or not a red flag?
Yeah,
this is a huge red flag. It's not a predictor, not, so here's what it is. It's kind of like espionage. Not all, in espionage, we have an expression, happy people don't commit espionage, but not all unhappy people do. And it's the same thing here. Not all people that say you're going to kill your wife kill their wives, but all people that have killed their wives typically have said, I'm going to kill my wife. Yeah, it is a predictor. Not a hugely accurate one that you can use in a court of law, but it's an art.
Well, if you're saying like 80% follow through on a threat, I mean, that's high. I mean,
I think that was the number. I've got so many numbers because they're covering something. Yeah. So here's, it's somewhere between 80 to 85 and definitely above 50 when I looked up that stat. It's huge. It's not an outlier. In other words, it's a predictor. And then to the other point, you know, the holding on to this for so long and also the 7-month marriage, here is, I think, an extreme level, because we all know people who are control freaks in our lives. But this is control freak-ish to the extreme level, because when people lose control, they have a fear. And when fear enters their bodies and enters their mind and psyches, they feel they need to do something to regain control so they no longer fear. Could be, you know, pure conjecture. Could be a reason why he's a doctor, practicing doctor, physician, control over lives, control. So this guy, to me, looks like a massive control freak. He loses control over her, fixates on it. And outwardly, because again, when you're looking for arcs and patterns that we outwardly observe, you don't see a lot of outwardly stuff that the rest of the world sees. But I'm telling you, it was brewing. He was, a resentment treasure trove internally. So she was occupying his brain space for a very, very long time, living inside his brain rent free. I don't think the rest of the world quite knew the extent of, but dare say, I think during the trial and for people that were close enough to him, and I'll say close enough because he probably pushed a lot of people away because of his behavior in general, there's going to be leakage. There's always leakage. And whether it comes out in writing, comes out in online surfing, trolling, whatever it is, there's always going to be some sort of leakage, because you cannot harbor such animosity towards another human being to the level that you're going to take a action that is so violent that it doesn't leak out. In other words, this, because again, it doesn't look like from 0 to 100 like this. He had to take a lot of effort. He had to go do a drive. He had to do some planning. So there's a lot in here he had to do. So it just doesn't snap. So I'm really curious about what kind of leakage they're going to see, what we're going to see him be exposed to during a trial.
I mean, yeah, I think we're going to, we got 8 years of anybody and everyone who interacted with him over that time. And I think we're going to see some really interesting stories. I think you're going to see everything. I really do. I think you're going to have some folks who probably are like, I worked with him. He seemed fine. You know, we went to McDonald's and talked to, and really that surface level, he got by in life, you know, pretty well for a pretty long period of time. You got to have some sort of skills to get that far. And I think you're going to see a level of that there, but I think we're going to also learn a lot more, like we did from that ex-girlfriend who allegedly dated him for a period of time there between the murders and Monique, where it was, she couldn't get deep with him. There was only so far she could go before it was like, you know, there's just, he's not opening up. And consider herself lucky, because if he did open up, that means he's being vulnerable to her. And then she would have ended up being a target very likely, because she would have wronged him and all that. The fact that he didn't allow himself to be vulnerable to another human being to that level, it shows his capacity to do so seemed to be very still focused on Monique. If in fact he did this and he wasn't able to open up or let anyone else, I guess, kind of take that spot. Members of Monique's family describe his behavior as a sustained campaign of emotional cruelty. They say Monique was terrified and willing to do anything to get out. That's quite a thing to say, and especially even from other people who were not the ones in the relationship. Sometimes you ask people about, well, how was that relationship with so-and-so that so-and-so was in? And you're going to, I think a lot of times you kind of get a vanilla version, not necessarily what the person who experienced it would. Well, it was kind of shaky. It was kind of rough. You know, it didn't work out well for them. They're just like, hell froze over and there's flames and it's horrible and it's just vastly not a good relationship. They're saying that. Obviously, she can't anymore. But I think it really says something about what she was communicating to those around her about just how dire that relationship was.
Yeah. You know, you hit a few things that really triggered some real deeper thoughts on this. And that is, I think he was very, very practiced at the 5-second highlight reel, as I call it. Yep. And that is what we present very consciously to the world around us. That's why people feel very bad about themselves sometimes if they start going on too much social media, because you're seeing people on TikTok and Instagram and everything posting these smiling faces, these great, beautiful vacations. Or like I'm a backpacker and everyone says, oh, you look so serene out on backpacking trails. Say, no, you're seeing the 5 seconds of awesomeness and the 24 hours of suck. Because that's what people do. They present their 5-second highlight reel to the world that kind of mystifies them and entrances them. And I think that's what he did here. Because, I mean, think about it. So here's someone that loves someone enough to get married, you know, thinking of her marrying him. And then all of a sudden, we go from 100 to 0. It bottoms out in 7 months. And that takes a lot of courage. And also, to me, so, and we've seen this with other relationships we've covered on the show before, too. For some reason, there wasn't a deep enough emotional entanglement by her to start rationalizing the behavior away and allow herself to be trauma bonded to him and stay with him. She like cut it and left.
Mm-hmm.
So that says to me, conjecture wise, that he wasn't sharing all of himself. He presented a very, very rehearsed 5-second highlight reel that made him extremely functional in life. Until they got married, until he felt in control. Now, because remember, control freaks are extremely possessive. And so there's my thought experiment on this is that now that she's mine, I can now be me because there's nowhere she can go. I control her. I think that's what happened. And when she ripped it away from him, that's when the resentment set in. And he's saying to himself in his mind is like, how dare she? I am who I am. I identify as this. I identify as this person that's in control of my environment. I'm the master of my universe. And how dare you defy me? And I'm going to right this wrong. And he's constantly, most likely, that's why I say we're going to see leakage over this, over the period of time, trying to validate his own self-worth and own self. Like he was hoping, pure conjecture on my side too, was that what she was – that he was going to troll her on social media and watch her fail, a failed marriage, a failed this. And every time she was showing something, grant, I haven't seen her social media. I don't know how much she was or on it or not on it. But every time he's seeing something, because she had to be doing something, he was getting knowledge about her somewhere. And she was not giving him what he needed to fuel that ego. And so that's what every time she had a success, every time she had a smile that wasn't generated by him and his control, it ate at him.
Yeah.
If he's guilty.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, you know, how social media works like that. And I think a lot of, it's a weird thing because you should, you know, quote unquote, be able to, you know, put whatever you want out there if you want, you know, and so your friends and your family, this is what we tell ourselves. This is what I tell myself, you know, so your friends and family can see what you're up to, especially if you don't like live near your family or whatnot. It's a great way without having to like, let me attach all these pictures to the email circa 1998. And then here's what we're up to. You know, I mean, that's how we used to do it. Social media made that really easy. Click, there you go. Here's my pictures and here's what's going on. But we, at that same point, you do have to take into consideration the people that are around you in your life or have been around you in your life, whether you like them or not, and what they may be using that material for. Whether it be, you know, sitting there sulking and getting angry. Should they be doing that? No. Are you going to stop them from doing that? Well, the only way to stop them from doing that is not putting it out there. There's that whole aspect of it. You have, you know, people who use the material for other things too. But it's part of the reality of what, where we live and how we live and how we interact with the world around us and what we put out there of us around us. And it's scary because it can invite that. It can certainly keep what otherwise may have been a fire that had gone out, was just kind of embers cooking, and had those images, had those things not been out there, maybe that fire would have just died off and he would have went away. No, I'm not in any way blaming her or saying anything about that. But I'm just saying, these are the considerations you must take in life, because it is what it is. And it goes back to, well, I shouldn't have to. You shouldn't have to. You're exactly right. But you do. And it is what it is. And if there's somebody out there that's like this in your world, unfortunately, here's how they will probably use anything you put out into the ether. And it's not going to be to go, oh, I'm so happy she moved on and is living a lovely life. No. He's going to sit there. He's going to sulk about it. And those embers are never going to go away. He's going to put more logs on the fire and he's going to show up again.
And it's really tough too, because I've been thinking about this so much, because one thing you and I always try to do is, all right, so what do we do from this point on? What do people that are in a similar situation do about something like this? What's a solution? You know, and you don't want to put anyone in lockdown, you know, from social media, if you've had an unhealthy relationship, out of fear, because then it's terrorism because they've won. At the same time, though,
is it though? Or
right? I know isn't that a tough question?
Is it though? I mean, is it really? Is it lockdown that you maybe you don't post all your pictures of your life on social media?
Well, so I mean, another person's freedom, you know, and so it's context. Yeah,
it is. But I mean, it's just at the same point, it's like. Or, you know, were we healthier when we didn't do this shit? Were we in a better society where we didn't have the ability to voyeuristically drop in on anyone's life who was once a part of ours at any given moment and feel whatever the fuck we're going to feel about it? You know, maybe we were better off when that wasn't necessarily an option at our fingertips. At any given moment, we're like, gee, I wonder what they're doing today and what they're looking like. And if you happen to have that broken brain, it sets you off into this sort of a spiral.
I don't know. There's an interesting philosophy when it comes to social media that I really like, and that is ask yourself before every posting, are you being a me-former or an informer? And it's just a good question to ask yourself, especially if you've been surrounded by some crazy.
Yeah.
You might want to really dial back the me-forming, because every time you're a me-former, in other words, putting information about yourself out there, you know, we had an expression in the FBI doing undercover work, is that you had your scenario, you had your background, you had who you were in a bucket. And every time you lent out one piece of knowledge from that bucket, it's gone. You have no longer have control of it. So we always want to maintain as much control as your background, your bona fides as possible, because once it's gone, you can't control it anymore. And it's the same thing with this. You know, if you're putting me former stuff out on social media, just realize if you don't close that circle and make it very tight about who's able to view it and see it, situations like this, again, I don't know what he was able to do or not do or see or not see, but there had to be, he had to be, I can't imagine a scenario where he didn't have any ability to observe her life and escalate to violence. Yeah. So he's getting leakage from her life somewhere that's able to fuel him. And you're right. Should we have to lock down ourselves because we had unhealthy crazy? No, but the reality is we really might need to, depending on how crazy the crazy is, because this one.
I mean, it really is what it is. It becomes this kind of ideological conversation, but it's like the ideology doesn't matter when you are mixing crazy into it. It's like, you should, you shouldn't, whatever the hell you want to believe. We should live in a perfect world. We can put whatever we want out there and there's no consequences to it whatsoever, because what we're putting out there is innocent, hopefully. You know, that still doesn't stop crazy. If there's crazy in your life, you don't have to have crazy in your life. There's just crazy out there. You are opening yourself up to the possibility of crazy finding you and finding whoever is in those photos and maybe using those for, you know, unscrupulous purposes, whether that means they're going to find the people in that photo or they're just going to look at your photo for whatever reason they're looking at your photo. It's out there. It is what it is. And it's up to you whether you want to open those doors or not. But there's no putting it out there going, don't open those doors, bad people. No, it's there. It's there. You are accepting that social contract when you put your information out there. Again, I am not blaming her. She can do whatever she wants. Anyone, and this is more so like kind of an ether conversation for anyone out there. You can do whatever you want, but don't expect safety or necessarily, you know, implicit safety and privacy if you're willingly volunteering your information to the world.
Right.
And whatever you put out there, assume it can be used wrongly and against you. And however that may be, I don't know, because you don't know who's consuming it. That's the danger that happens out there. Now, in most cases, does it end like this? No. But it does sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of, that's the dice you roll when you put it out there. Again, not blaming, but it is something that I feel like society as a whole needs to be a little bit better at weighing those consequences of the decision of clicking post on whatever the hell they're putting out there. Is it worth it? Are the benefits of clicking post and whatever likes you get and whatever comments you get, does that outweigh? And this is an individual question for each individual situation. Does that outweigh the risks of what you're putting out there for who could potentially use it against you? And if the answer is no, don't fucking post it. It's that simple. But I want to get those likes. I want to feel that tough shit.
Yeah, so
find another way.
We could
find another way to feel good about yourself and validate yourself.
Yeah, going down the road of the evils of social media and what our bodies get from it and our brains get from it,
yeah.
Don't get from it. That is a easy conversation to have, because always ask yourself, for whose benefit am I posting this?
Yeah.
That's the difference between a me former and an informer. And mm-hmm. even on the informer part, you know, it's always about putting knowledge out for the benefit of others, as long as there's no gain for self. That is an informer. And realize when you're me forming to the world, you know, sharing a photo, sharing a thought, an idea, something from your life, being vulnerable, all these things that are very good for a click, because, you know, that's what people love to watch. It's 100% ego driven. These things that are me forming are ego driven. And always be careful. Your ego can be your enemy, as Ryan Holiday says, and I talk about, you know, in my content as well. Our ego, it's our survival mechanism, because when we are me-centered, it allows us to prioritize ourselves and our safety, so we can actually be there for others' safety and our children, because that's how we controlled our environments as ancient primal Homo sapiens. At the same time, though, when it's out of balance and our emotional intelligence is out of balance, that me-centeredness, it drives us to do really stupid things that are not in our best interest. And so that's the question. There's always slow down. Don't have an emergency takeoff of posting something and then asking yourself these questions. Ask yourself, for whose benefit am I posting this? Play that tape forward a little bit. If someone in my life, past life, any life, could benefit in a negative way that's negative to me in any way, why am I posting this? And then just always ask, what's the purpose of me posting this? Is it helping or hindering the healthy relationships in my life and other people's lives? And does anyone really care, or do I care?
Exactly. Yeah. No, these are all questions that no one asks themselves.
I mean, we can actually just look at this pragmatically. So, Tony, you know, your YouTube channel is killing it. I mean, you are getting hundreds of thousands of hits now, you know, all the follows and everything else. And you know why? Because we're not talking about Tony's life and Robin's life. We're talking about everyone else's lives. You know, that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to inform, not me form. We're giving thoughts and opinions. Yeah. You know, and so it's how these things typically work.
Well, at the same point, though, I will argue this. There's plenty of YouTube channels out there that are 1,000% about a single person. And it's narcissist central. And they get millions of views, far larger channels than ours. And it's all narcissistic content. And then others look at that and go, oh, that must be how you do it.
But look at the price. There's a price.
But people don't always see that price at that moment. They just see people are very good at picking what they want to see too, of like, oh, that looks fun. And they don't necessarily understand the repercussions or the trade-offs with that level of exposure for oneself until it's too late and after that lever's already been pulled.
A lot of personal attacks from people that do that.
You have
supporters, you have an awful lot of haters in that.
Yeah.
But also, that's what all the algorithms pick up as well.
It does. I mean, it's I feel like You know, like when you, sometimes when you make a big purchase or something online, or you're making some sort of decision online, you'll get the prompts. It's not just like click done. It's like, are you sure? Are you sure? Is this the right card? Is this your right information? Double check it again. Like, I feel like on Facebook or whatever it may be, there should be like, are you sure you want to post this? Did you consider all the possible repercussions of posting a picture with this person of what those in the ether may see or gain out of this picture? And I think a lot of times people in their mind, and I'm not saying, and I'm saying this more on a broad-based scale, I'm not speaking for Monique or anything like that, but I do think sometimes, especially when people do get into new relationships and things like that, they do post it. And part of it is just, I'm happy, I should be proud. And part of it is, fuck you. Part of it is, fuck you, look, I'm happy you're not. Because we all have that aspect of us. We all have that little bit of us. I don't think anyone is being intellectually honest with themselves if there's not one at least little part of them that once they've got out of some sort of hellscape of a relationship and have found something healthy, that there's not a moment that they don't want to wave a fucking flag to that asshole and go, see, motherfucker, I lived, I survived.
I saved myself. Right.
I saved myself. And we do that by doing social media. Now, does that little bit of thing, does that little bit of me feeling, ha, they saw that, they see I'm happy, is that then worth that person being set off who's already unhinged and knowing that that could do that to them because they saw that? Now, should it? No, but it does. And so that's the reality we got to deal with. Is it worth it? Is it worth doing that little jab to the asshole of, see, I'm happy? Versus what that could do. I mean, is it worth jumping in the lion cage for 2 seconds when the ladder's right there? You can jump right out. Sure. Could you get in there real quick? Wave to the lion. He starts walking towards you. You climb out the ladder. Sure. The ladder could also tip over and you're fucking stuck too.
Yeah. So, I'm not a fan of poking at crazy. Because you don't know what crazy is going to do. It's interesting. We had this conversation with a couple friends, you know. Part of the ability to kind of sit back and observe and take it all in with a healthy viewpoint is you and I have talked about this offline as well, Tony, is I just back away from crazy.
Yeah.
It's so easy to recognize because I don't, and some people say, someone said to me the other day that, you know, only through, and I get it, only through friction and only through conflict can we grow. Yeah, but if I don't have to choose, I can grow by watching you be nuts without me engaging it. Because in order to be present for other people, this kind of goes into my philosophy of how to do behavioral analysis and how to live life. I have to have a calm brain. In order to have a calm brain, so I can see what is without with the greatest possibility of losing as much confirmation bias as I have in my own life, you know, for whatever biases we all carry, in order to do that, you have to be able to engage without the brain noise, as I call it. And the noise is the crazy people that are doing unreasonable things in your lives, making unreasonable demands, basically being unhealthy left, right, and sideways and upside down. And so in order to be present for others and see what is, so you can become the beacon or you gravitate people towards the healthy light, you have to let go of the crazy and you have to recognize. Yeah. And I recognize it like seconds, and I don't judge it because everyone has a bit of chaos.
Yeah.
But it's your choice about how deeply you want to engage that chaos. Here's what I'll just tell everyone watching and listening is that in order to really avoid the chaos, you have to just create the calm inside yourself first, because then it's like I grew up, both my parents smoked when I was growing up, and it was a lot of smoke in my house, so much so that I was oblivious to it for many years. And then all of a sudden, you know, both my parents gave up smoking, and, you know, years later, but now I could smell smoke like 3 houses away if someone's smoking a cigarette, because we become so sensitized because we don't have it in our environment anymore. Yeah. In order to recognize the crazy in our lives, we just have to create the calm. And don't judge the crazy. Everyone's walking their path, unless the crazy's unhealthy, and then we got to do something about it, as I've seen in these other cases. But man, you just got to just be aware of what you're dealing with, I guess, is just be sucked into the nuts.
I think you're exactly right. The problem lies in if you've always been kind of surrounded by crazy to a certain extent, and I have no idea what the situation was with the Tepes. But if crazy has been kind of your baseline for most of your life, you're going to seek out crazy because that's normal. And and the calm, the quiet is abnormal. And it takes a lot of work to learn to be still and to learn to be okay with calm. And once you can get there, then then the smoke stands out more to you. The crazy stands out more to you. But so many of us, I think, inadvertently seek out crazy because that sounds like home. It sounds normal. It is the baseline. And we don't realize how crazy is. And an extreme crazy may not look as extreme if your baseline is here on Crazyville. Extreme's only over here. If you were down here in Calm Land, extreme's going to look way the fuck out of left field. But if you're already right here, it's not that far. It's not that far of a journey to get there. But getting down to Calm Land is the journey, and that is the work. And that's something that I think a lot of people need to take a step back from and look and go, what is my baseline? And it's not that you are crazy. I'm not saying Monique is crazy, but what you're surrounding yourself by and what you're taking in and what you're allowing yourself to take in, if so much of it is crazy, you're not going to recognize it. You're too engrossed in it.
And I got a feeling, you know, that she created a lot of good calm and healthy in her life. And I just, like I said, I think this guy was just so good at masking his crazy. Especially when you had distance. He had distance between her and him. And he had he's a doctor. He's exceptionally practiced at control.
Yeah.
And I think he can control himself so very well. He masked a lot of this, but that's why I'm so curious about where the leakage is going to come out when we see it.
I'm curious if there was any connection or any communication in those years, because there may have been none. I mean, there really may have been none, and it may have been all on his side. A lot of this today, I don't want anybody to think that I'm referring to Monique and her actions. It's more so kind of a 10,000 foot overview of this sort of interaction that
basically how she was targeted.
As people handle crazy, because there's so much of it out there. Yeah. Let's move on to another case. Let us know your thoughts in the comment section on that one on our YouTube channel or on our Substack, hiddenkillers.substack.com, to weigh in there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. Is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
It's a lot of questions in this case, the case against Michael McKee for the death of Spencer and Monique Tepe. And with so many cases that we cover here, you end up discovering other aspects of the accused life that raise a lot of questions. That raise a lot of questions, not only about what they're doing, but what they're allowed to do or were allowed to do leading up to said tragedy, allegedly. We saw it in the Devil's Den case that we covered last year here, where we broke a lot of that information on this program. About the school system, about the education system and passing the trash. If you're unfamiliar with that, that was teachers who have not good records, disciplinary records at one school in one district, or complaints in one school in one district that never get quite fully addressed or litigated. And it's just kind of like, okay, you're going to move on. We're going to move on. Everybody's happy over here. We're not going to press charges. We're just going to get rid of this person. And then they go get a job somewhere else in another district that knows nothing about what happened prior. And there's no way to really trace it. Well, surprise, surprise, the same sort of thing can happen in medicine too. And we might be on the edge of something here, starting to discover something that I don't want to say we're digging this up like it's not known. It's known. It's just, it seems to be one of those little factoids that's icky enough that people don't like to spend a lot of time digging into, because it's kind of disturbing when you think about it. And it's kind of something that you can't really just kind of flip a switch and change. Because if you're going to use the medical system in any way, shape, or form, you're kind of at their mercy to a certain extent. And nobody wants to believe that it's not always on the up and up. Or not always as thorough, I guess, as it should be on vetting those that it puts in its institutions and gives the title of doctor to. Let's get into this, shall we? And while we do, your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube or on our Substack channel, which you can now join for absolutely free. There is no paywall as of right now. Get access to all of our videos like a day before they go out to everybody else. There's no ads. It's a way you can interact with us directly in the studio. I highly suggest joining it and joining our community over there. It's really growing, and I'm really, really appreciating everyone who's joined us on Substack so far. So welcome everybody who's there. And if you're not joining us, here's your invite. Please do come check it out. The link is in the description section of this video or podcast. All right, so here's the timeline that should bother you a little bit. July of 2023, a vascular surgeon named Michael McKee is named in a malpractice lawsuit after a procedure goes wrong in Las Vegas. A 8.6-inch catheter fragment allegedly left in the patient's leg, requiring emergency surgery. The suit alleges McKee failed to properly supervise the physician's assistant. For the next 2 years, an attorney named Dan Laird tries to serve McKee with papers. He attempts it over a dozen times. The surgical group McKee worked for gives Laird an address. It doesn't exist. They give him phone numbers that go nowhere. Laird reaches out to McKee's colleagues. One of them tells him, quote, "I have no idea where Michael McKee is now." Then June of 2025, McKee's Nevada medical license expires. The lawsuit's still pending. He's still missing. And here's where it gets interesting. Somewhere in 2024, while a malpractice attorney is struggling to locate McKee, the state of Illinois grants him a medical license. He gets credentialed at OSF St. Anthony Medical Center in Rockford. He starts operating on patients, allegedly. And then December 30th of 2025, his ex-wife Monique Teppey and her husband Spencer are found shot to death in their Columbus, Ohio home. Police believe they were killed between 2 and 5 a.m. Surveillance footage allegedly links McKee to a vehicle that arrived before the shooting and left after. And then according to the timeline, McKee goes back to work for 11 days. A man allegedly being hunted for double homicide was employed as a vascular surgeon at a Rockford hospital. Credentialed, on staff, and by all accounts, still working. On January 10th, 2026, ATF agents arrested McKee at a Chick-fil-A. It's blocks from the hospital. So here's a question nobody seems to be asking. How does a doctor who's been difficult to locate for a malpractice lawsuit, who allegedly provided addresses that don't exist, with an expired license in another state, get credentialed to cut people open in Illinois? How does that happen? Well, the answer is worse than you think, because Michael McKee isn't an outlier. He is a symptom. You'd think there was a system in place to catch doctors like this, right? There is. And like so many things, it just doesn't work. It's one of those things where, well, there's a system for this. Yes, there's a system for this. People don't tend to ask the next question, does it work? Oh, that part of the, well, you know, we don't have a national medical license in our country. We have 50 independent state medical boards, each doing their own thing, each with their own standards, each with their own level of give a damn. And because doctors have always been able to hop state lines when things get uncomfortable, Congress created something called the National Practitioner Data Bank back in 1986. The explicit purpose, and I'm quoting the legislation here, was to prevent practitioners from moving state to state without disclosure or discovery of previous damning performance. The NPDB contains malpractice payments, disciplinary actions, hospital privilege revocations, over 1.3 million records. It's exactly the kind of database that should have flagged McKee. Here's the catch. You can't see it. Yeah. You don't get it. You don't get to see this. You don't get to make the choice yourself of who gets to operate on you. You don't get to see their past disciplinary record or lawsuit history. The public is largely barred from accessing it. Only hospital insurers and state medical boards can query the NPDB. You, the patient, the person about to go under the knife, you don't get to know what's in there. But here's the bigger catch. A lot of state medical boards don't even bother to check. A USA Today investigation found that 30 state medical boards performed fewer than 100 NPDB searches in a single year. So it exists. It's just not, it's like LinkedIn. It's like, you have a LinkedIn profile, right? Yeah, I think everybody does at this point. When's the last time you were on LinkedIn? I don't know. A decade ago? 13 performed. My God, a USA Today investigation found that 30 state medical boards perform fewer than 100 NPDB searches in a single year. 13 performed zero. 13 states didn't even bother. And maybe there's a reason. Maybe it's just like, you know, maybe it is kind of like what's the point? The database built specifically to catch doctors moving state to state to escape their past, and state boards aren't even using it. The people, the citizens who are going under the knife, who don't have the rights to do it, who maybe, you know, it's one of those things where, well, of course they're doing their due diligence. Of course there's safeguards in place. Of course they're doing their job, right? Wrong. But even if Illinois had queried the NPDB before licensing McKee, it might not have mattered because the system has holes big enough to drive an ambulance through. The NPDB only tracks paid claims. McKee's Nevada lawsuit is still pending. No settlement, no jury verdict, no payment, which means no NPDB entry. He's invisible to the system designed to catch him. His Nevada license expired in June of 25, but expiration isn't the same as revocation. It's not discipline. It doesn't automatically trigger red flags when he applies somewhere else. The Illinois application asked doctors to disclose if they've ever been disciplined. McKee, as far as we know, as of now, hadn't been, technically. A pending lawsuit isn't discipline, and the specific disclosure requirements vary by state. Some ask about pending litigation, some don't. And the questions are often narrowly worded. Nobody at the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation apparently thought to search Nevada civil court records. Because why would they? They didn't do it for anybody else. Why were they suddenly for him? Because if they had, they would have found a malpractice lawsuit, an attorney who spent 2 years trying to locate the guy, and a pattern of addresses that didn't exist and phone numbers that led nowhere. Every safeguard we think exists has a hole in it. Michael McKee allegedly drove right on through. And if you think he's unique, you haven't been paying attention. Let me tell you about Dr. Larry Mitchell Isaacs, shall we? In California, Isaacs removed a woman's fallopian tube. He thought it was her appendix. She didn't have an appendix anymore. He did follow-up surgery on her and allegedly left her intestine unconnected. Facing state sanctions, he surrendered his California license. Like, if you're messing up that bad, okay. Maybe he's calling it a day. Maybe he's going, you know what? This whole surgery, medical thing, it ain't for me. I'm going to go get a job down at the Cabela's. No, he moved to Louisiana. There he allegedly removed a healthy kidney during what was supposed to be a colon surgery. And he surrendered his Louisiana license after the kidney incident. New York regulators started coming after him based on his California problems. He then surrendered his New York license too. As of that investigation, Larry Mitchell Isaacs was practicing medicine at an urgent care clinic in Cincinnati, Ohio. Clean record. His quote to investigators, "I didn't do anything wrong anywhere." Here's how it works. I mean, those are the allegations. Here's how it works. When you surrender a license voluntarily, it often seals the records. It doesn't automatically trigger action in other states. The doctor simply doesn't surrender in states where they're still licensed. It's a get-out-of-jail-free card, basically. You can bounce from state to state, leaving a trail of damned patients behind you, and the system shrugs. And nobody knows your work. The numbers back this up. A joint investigation by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, USA Today, and MedPage found over 500 doctors who'd been disciplined in one state practicing elsewhere with a clean license. More than 250 doctors who surrendered a medical license were able to practice in another state. A third of those faced no limitations whatsoever in their new location, and 216 collected a combined $26 million from Medicare despite having lost a license or been excluded from state health care programs. I hope you don't have a medical appointment today. I hope you don't have surgery today, because this would not be the video to watch right before it. It's kind of like watching an airplane crash video right before you get on the plane. It's like, are the odds that good that they're going to happen to you? No, probably not. But it's still something you don't necessarily want in the back of your mind. And probably isn't a guarantee. And your odds are probably greater in this arena of going down than on a plane. So, was a doctor in Kansas who'd been sued for malpractice 13 times in Illinois, was he a good one to go practice in Missouri? Well, yeah, because Missouri said good standing. It's right next to Kansas, by the way, if you're playing geography with us. Missouri patients had no way to know. In education, we learned last year that it's called passing the trash. It's when school administrators let teachers accused of misconduct quietly resign and move to another district without disclosing what actually happened. And we've actually tried to stop it. The Every Student Succeeds Act of 2015 prohibits schools from helping employees with a history of SA misconduct get new jobs. 27 states have compliance laws on the books. It's not 50, but they're working on it. Because it's apparently really difficult to protect kids. America. For doctors, there's nothing. No equivalent federal law, no equivalent reform. The database exists, but it's secret. The alert system exists, but boards kind of ignore them. Senator Ron Wyden helped create the NPDB. He's been pushing to make it public for years. When asked why it hasn't happened, his answer was blunt. Physician groups are very powerful and have consistently opposed it. Of course they have. Nobody wants to have their dirty laundry aired. And nobody wants to see how many horrible doctors are out there. They don't. We already have a shortage. This would probably increase it. But do you want to keep playing the odds? Is this something where you just, where you want, you know, DEI hires, basically? Where it's not that, but it's basically, well, we need a doctor in this community and no one else wants to live here. You're it. Good luck, everybody. Because that's how a lot of communities are. The American Medical Association official position is that the database is inherently flawed and lacks accuracy. Translation, trust us. Just don't verify. So we have better systems to track problem teachers, which are not good, than problem surgeons. A high school coach accused of misconduct faces more scrutiny changing districts than a vascular surgeon faces changing states, which in reality is not a lot of scrutiny. So it's even less. Because in no way am I trying to prop up the way the school systems work, because it doesn't work well. But when that becomes like a better standard, like, look, if only you could reach that bar of failure. Yeah. The fixes aren't complicated. Make the NPDB public. Mandate that state boards actually query it before issuing licenses. require disclosure of pending lawsuits, not just paid claims, trigger automatic reviews when a license is surrendered anywhere, verify addresses, check civil court records. You know, do the basic work. You'd think it'd be some sort of like informed consent law that you would have a right to know the history of who's about to potentially kill you as they open you up. Nope. None of it is going to happen. The lobbying power is too strong. The boards are too underfunded. The system is designed to protect physician mobility and privacy. Patient safety comes second. That's not a bug, that's a feature. And you're probably just learning about this right now. So there's that. There's that problem. There's the awareness problem. Unless people are aware that there's a problem and are willing to speak out about it, nothing's going to be done. Same with the school stuff. It's icky. It's scary. It's yucky. It makes you feel, yeah. Yeah, that's the point. It should make you feel, yeah. That should be the motivation to do something about it. That should be the motivation to feel something. Not just, oh, it hurts my feelings, make them stop. Yeah, life comes with a lot of shit. That's where you got to kind of step up and make it better for yourself and future generations. Not just, oh. So here's where we are. Dr. Michael McKee discloses the national lawsuit on his Illinois, or did Michael McKee disclose the Nevada lawsuit on his Illinois application? We don't know. Doubtful. Did anyone at IDFPR query the NPDB? We don't know. Did anyone verify his address or check civil court records in states where he'd practice? We don't know. Did OSF St. Anthony do their own credentialing check? We don't know. What we do know is this. Michael McKee allegedly murdered two people on December 30th, and according to the timeline, he went back to work. He was employed at the hospital for 11 days while people in Ohio built a murder case against him, and then he got arrested at a Chick-fil-A blocks from the hospital. The system didn't catch him. The system wasn't designed to. And here's the thing that should keep you up at night. If he hadn't been arrested, he'd probably still have a scalpel in his hand right now. There's a lot more I think we're going to learn in the coming days. There's other reports that have been coming out unconfirmed, and I got to say that, unconfirmed, without a doubt, that there was a surgery that didn't go so well after the murders. Or it went well, or went whatever it went, wherever it went. Can't say it didn't go well. I don't know the answer to that. But wherever it went, the allegation is the patient is dead now. We may be hearing about that more in detail as some of those facts are confirmed. Again, we don't know. It's not confirmed as of now. There's a lot of scuttlebutt, if you will, online about it. But I'm seeing it from some pretty reputable sources online, not major news organizations yet, but I'm seeing it from some other creators that have been pretty reputable on a lot of these facts where comes out here, and then a couple days later, we got more info. So I guess stay tuned. We'll find out more, and we'll let you know about that as we discover it. Could be nothing, but, I mean, just the thought of that for a moment. You murdered two people, and then a few days later, you're operating. I don't think anybody would want that to be the person that's operating on you. I don't know. Call me crazy. Let's continue this conversation in the comments section. You can leave your thoughts there right now on YouTube. Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi is where you'll find us, or on our Substack channel. That's where you can access all of our reporting, and you get it a day before everybody else, and there's no ads. Love to get your thoughts and your feedback there. Hiddenkillers.substack.com. The link is in the comments section. And hey, by the way, if you're not there already, Apple Podcasts, you can take us with us wherever you go so you can listen to the same stuff that you're watching. Please do subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review there. That helps signal to others that you're finding this valuable. So if you are finding this valuable, a quick review on Apple Podcasts is always very much appreciated. All right. We will continue the conversation off the air. Until then, my name is Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end.
Huh, Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter, from plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made, because that's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end.
Huh, Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA. Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited. Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them, while everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas-style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end.
Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
If you like your true crime like you like your coffee,
Red Handed is the podcast for you.
It's dark, intense, and might just keep you up all night.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Saruti. And every week on Red Handed, we break down a different fascinating case.
From the most recent US trials everyone is obsessing over, like Brendan Banfield, Karen Reed, and Ellen Greenberg,
to the most unbelievable stories from around the world, there's nothing we love more than digging into every detail of the cases we cover, getting beyond a basic analysis and cutting to the heart of the story.
Red Handed has over 400 episodes ready to binge right now.
Plus, be sure to check out our weekly sister show, Shorthand, where we unpack everything from the Black Death to Area 51.
If you're looking for smart, detailed true crime with personality, check out Red Handed wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.